ॐ सहनावतु सहनोभुनक्तु ॐ श्रीमन्महागणाधिपतये नमः. सेल्फ एन्क्वायरी एन्क्वायरी इंटू द नेचर ऑफ द सेल्फ. आत्म विचारः आत्म स्वरूप विचारः स्व स्वरूप विचारः इज ऑलवेज डन विद द हेल्प ऑफ द स्क्रिप्चर. देयर इज नो इंडिपेंडेंट सेल्फ एन्क्वायरी. एज आई सेड यस्टरडे, द ह्यूमन प्रॉब्लम being centered on I, the solution for the problem also is centered on I only. So in India, the very culture is such that ultimately everything is for understanding the Lord. Finally, what do you want to achieve in life? If they say that people know or not, but generally there is this understanding is there that we are living this life ultimately to discover Bhagavan. Or some people will say, one day I should see Bhagavan. In fact, so seeing Bhagavan, understanding Bhagavan is another expression to say that understanding the truth is the understanding of Bhagavan. And we will not be interested in doing something which is not useful for us. We will be interested in something from which we benefit, which is useful for us. And here also, the Phalashruti is very clear. Phalashruti means, what is that I'm going to benefit from knowing the truth? What is I'm going to benefit? How it's going to be useful? It is this understanding of utility, understanding of what I'm going to gain by knowing the truth. Alone makes me interested in the very study of the scripture. Because in discovering the truth, I discover what I am been searching for. And this fact I understand through the study of the Shastra. And this truth also, when you say the truth of this entire universe, which is otherwise given the name Bhagavan, the Lord, which alone is in the form of this entire universe, is available for my knowledge, is available for recognition, available for understanding only in one's own mind. So this fact also revealed in the very Shastra. so that we can avoid unnecessarily searching for the truth elsewhere. The clue is given. And when the clue is given, the truth is available for recognition in one's own mind, as one's own self. The solution for the fundamental problem centered on I is also revealed. So you discover the truth to discover fullness. You discover the truth as yourself, so you resolve the fundamental problem also. It is one and the same. Resolving one's fundamental problem, discovering the truth, thereby discovering fullness, is the same. And for us, understanding something, knowing something, means that something which is to be known must be available for perception, or it must be available for thought conception, or it must be describable. It must be available for description, word description. So understanding something which is available for sense perception or thought conception or word description is possible. But here what needs to be understood is something which cannot be perceived, which cannot be conceived, which cannot be described. Because what is to be understood is the very truth of everything that is to be, everything that can be perceived. What is to be understood is the very truth of what is to be conceived. It is, what is to be understood is the very truth of what is, truth of the very word which describes anything and everything. Therefore, the truth is the abstract. This is how we understand the meaning of the word abstract. Abstract, subtlest. We can say, what do we mean by something which is subtle? Imperceptible, inconceivable, indescribable is the abstract, most abstract, the subtlest. Finally, this mind has to arrive at this abstract, the subtlest. This human mind, which is capable of penetrating, probing into things, understanding many facts, has to finally arrive at this truth. And of all these, of all the manifestations of all the objects in the world, and the human mind is the subtlest of the manifestations. And this subtlest mind has to discover much subtler than the mind. Therefore, the truth is available as the very truth of the mind. The truth is available for recognition as the very swarupam of the antahkaranam. That is why in Taittiriya Upanishad, it is very clearly said, guhayam nihitam. The truth is hidden in the cave of mind. The cave, which is nothing but the mind. To discover the truth of wave, you have to go to the wave, and there the truth of the wave is available. The truth of the whole is available as the truth of the mind. Therefore, mind is antahkaranam, is the locus where truth has to be discovered. Even the truth is everywhere. In truth, everything is. When it is said, the problem is centered on I, Shastram has thoroughly analyzed that a human misery, the suffering of a human being, is purely because of his lack of discriminative understanding. Of the satyam and mithya. What is real and what is as though. And he has to see that what is real as one's own self. That is where one has to resolve one's I sense. The resolution is called pravilapanam. How we see the wave being water, we do experience the form wave. We do experience the form indicated by the word wave and also its function, how it rises, how it exists, and how it resolves. And that wave, which enjoys temporary existence, which has a beginning, which enjoys existence for length of time, and which resolves, which is available for experience and enjoyment temporarily, and that wave is the form is as though, the word indicating that form is as though, the function of wave running around is also as though. And what is real with reference to wave is water. When we say wave is water, we are resolving the form, name, and function called wave in its truth, the swarupam, water. Physically undoing anything, physically without doing anything, intellectually we are resolving the form, name, and function called wave in its truth, water. You say wave is water. This is called pravilapanam. Here we say the form wave is mithya because the form doesn't have independent existence outside of the water. And the word wave will be meaningless without the form. And the purpose served by that form or the function associated with that form will be also impossible without the form. Therefore, the form, name and function, all the three, we say, what is perceptible, enjoyable, what available for experience is mithya. When you say mithya, it is not negated as unreal, tucham. At the same time, it is not accepted as satyam also, real also. So that which cannot be said to be unreal, absolutely non-existent, that which cannot be accepted as absolutely real, is technically known by the term mithya. Sad asad bhyam vilakshanam. So that which cannot be defined as satyam, that which cannot be defined as asatyam, asat, is mithya. So this mithya is that which is as though. So that which is as though means that which does not have independent existence of its own, therefore which is non-countable, which cannot be counted as real. And this mithya is really not there. Satyam alone is in the form of mithya. This mithya is nothing but satyam. Satyam alone is in the form of mithya. There's no such a thing called mithya. What is mithya is nothing but satyam. Then you say, when you say mithya is satyam, what is the form, wave is nothing but water. When you say we have cognitively resolved this form, name and function called wave in its swarupam, the truth, water. So resolution of mithya in satyam cognitively is pravilapanam. Then we have to say what is only satyam. Initially we talk about the mithya. Because it is available for experience, it is not absolutely non-existent, it is not tucham. But on analysis, we resolve it in satyam. Then we say, what is only satyam. Similarly here, we have to resolve this I in its truth. I sense. Aham vrittihi. When I say aham vrittihi, I sense. Ahankaraha. Aham vrittihi. Doesn't exist independently by itself on its own. Cannot exist by itself independently on its own without this whole being there. You say whole being. Without the abode of enjoyment called physical body, without the instruments of enjoyment called subtle body, in terms of karmendriyani, jnanendriyani, panchakoshaha, antahkaranam, etc. Without all of them, there cannot be something called I sense. At the same time, without the I sense also, this body, mind, sense complex will be as good as non-existent. How do we understand this? Whenever this I sense, the knowledge of the existence of the self rising in the form of a thought, obtaining in the form of a thought, in terms of I am, when it is resolved, temporarily for a length of time, then the state of mind is called a deep sleep state. The physical body, sense powers, powers of organs of actions, or the, even the function of meditation, everything is as good as non-existent. The physical body cannot be active and functional because sense powers cannot be functional. The powers of organs of actions cannot be functional. Antakaranam cannot be functional. Antakaranam is present but still cannot be functional. For everything to be functional, everything to be, to have the status of being the existent, there must be I sense. Temporary resolution of ahankara makes the abode of enjoyment, instruments of enjoyment, non-functional. That is why when permanently antakaranam leaves, we, without any hesitation, even though we feel sad, but still we, any hesitation, uniformly, unanimously, we all agree to send the body to the crematorium of the person who is dead. Because it's of no use. So this I sense is there all over in the entire body, mind, sense complex, which means it is not possible for us to distinguish the I sense. Therefore, we cannot understand also what this I sense is. We do not understand in what form does it obtain also. We simply use the expression I. Once you wake up from sleep until we fall asleep, we use this expression I to refer to ourselves, to refer to all our activities, to refer to everything that we do. Of course, in Vyavahara, in this world, for transactions, we do have to use this relatively. Even to differentiate oneself from the rest of the world, we need this. At the same time, for relative purpose, to transact in the world, to interact with the world, we can use I sense differently, but definitely to resolve our actual problems, the so-called human misery, the human sufferings, the mental trauma, the emotional trauma that every human being is going through. The fear, the anxiety, to resolve it, definitely there is a need for one to distinguish this I sense and to understand what it is. In distinguishing it, differentiating it, and understanding what it is, Shastram says the fundamental problem will be centered on I will be resolved for good. If this fundamental problem is resolved, then our error in the perception of the world, that the world is responsible for what I am going through in my life. People I associate with, people whom I come to know, people whom I work with, my acquaintances, my relatives, my family members, or even the other people or other external situations, which are mistaken to be sources of my suffering, mistaken to be responsible for all the problems I have. This error in the perception of the world will resolve. So in spite of the world being what it is, irrespective of how the world is what it is, still one can keep oneself absolutely in good humor if the fundamental problem is resolved. So whatever is the external situation, still one can be unafflicted. One can remain unaffected by external situation if this fundamental problem is sorted out. This is what is called Jivana Muktihi. But we try to solve the problems by changing the situations outside. We can do the needful, we can act prudently, thoughtfully, intelligently to change certain things outside, but actually, once the perception inside, in the mind, of the world it changes, then I can happily, objectively do things in the world. I need not do things for my happiness, but I can do things happily, in happiness, which will be an abundantly a contributive life. So for moksha is in changing our perception of the world. Absolutely, I'm repeating sentence, in spite of the world being what it is, irrespective of how the world is, when I say the world, I mean every one of us have our own small world. Swamiji always said, 10 significant people in your life. We don't have a big world around us. The world is big, but how many people do we deal with, associate with, handle with? Handle. How many things do we do in our lives? Our world is so small. In this huge, incomprehensibly vast world, our world is small. For every one of us have to deal with only very few people. But still, and the relationships, in everything we go through, a lot of pain. All these things come to me because of my counseling, okay? This, my experience brings out everything with people. Not that I just want to talk like this. It's all purely. So the whole freedom from suffering, freedom from misery in changing the perception of the world. We cannot change our perception. The change has to take place in us. We cannot change. The change has to be brought about by understanding. It is simple understanding of two facts. That is, the world is not at all responsible for what I am going through. And the world, if I understand this, the world is not responsible for what I am going through. It can be, I may think my own children. I'm sad because my daughter is not settled, my son is not settled, or they're all okay. Really speaking, and this is the way they are living, so I'm unhappy. Even this. So the world is not at all responsible for my unhappiness, what I'm going through in my life. Nobody in the world is responsible. This fact will help me resolve my hatred, aversion towards everything in the world, dislike towards everything in the world. It's called neutralizing dvesha. How you can neutralize your dvesha? By repeatedly seeing the fact, neutralizing one's dveshaha, hatred, aversion towards, because aversion, hatred, in Sanskrit we call it dveshaha, dvishyati, the verb dveshaha. I tell you, it will cause it will disturb the mind, mental disturbance, the great disturbance of the mind is caused by the dvesha. So dislike, a hatred, hatefulness, aversion, this will resolve. One can neutralize this if we understand, accept the fact that the world is not in any way responsible for even the tiniest bit of unhappiness that I'm going through in my life. Suffering I go through in my life. The next thing is the world, nobody in the world, nothing in the world is source of happiness. Nothing in the world can really give me happiness. This fact, understanding of this fact, will help me neutralize my passion for the world. Will help me resolve, neutralize my attachment to the world. In fact, we always define this attachment. Now, what is attachment? Mistaking the world for source of happiness. When you say world, I mean people, situations, things, relationships, or experiences, objects of enjoyment, everything. You mistake the world for the source of happiness and security. And depending upon that world for happiness and security is attachment. So therefore, detachment means understanding the fact that the world is not the source of happiness or security, and thereby not being dependent on the world for happiness and security is detachment. So running away from the world is not detachment. Keeping one's away from the world and people is not detachment. The attachment and detachment is an understanding of the world, in having the understanding we have of the world. If there is error in my perception of the world, there is attachment. If my perception of the world is correct, there is detachment. So when is attachment? When I mistake the world for source of happiness and security, and I'm dependent on the world for my happiness and security, it is attachment. It's a wrong perception. If I understand the fact that the world is not a source of happiness or security, thereby I'm not dependent on the world, it is detachment. Similarly, if I mistake the world is to be responsible for my unhappiness, for all my suffering, then I have aversion for the world, it is attachment. If I understand the fact that the world is not responsible in any way for what I'm going through, thereby, I have no dislike or aversion or hatred towards the world, that is detachment. Therefore, the whole suffering is in my wrong perception of the world. Definitely, the error in my perception of the world needs to be corrected. And this correction cannot take place easily. Correction is not that easy. Because I cannot think differently. Therefore, if the error in my perception of the world, see, having wrong perception of the world, all the time, my perception of the world is wrong. Whatever I do, having error in my perception of the world, whatever I do, that will add to my, what I'm going through in my life, my prayer, my worship, my meditation practices, all these things help me forget the suffering I go through, because that will not help me. That is why we complain. I'm prayerful, I'm worshipful, I go to temples, I do this japam, I do that parayanam, I go for this pilgrimage, nothing works, no Bhagavan is helpful. Because definitely, if we had to be free of this drama, the perception of our world needs to be corrected. And the error in the perception of the world can be corrected only if the error in the perception of one's own self is corrected. And why there is error in perception? Why I cannot see differently? Why I cannot look at things differently? Why my mind conceives like this? Why there's a lot of cobwebs? Shastram says it is because there is error in perception of your own self. In fact, Vidyaranya Swami in his Drishya Viveka, he talks about this dosha, drishto doshaha. There's error in your perception where? Of the world. Because there's error in perception of your own self. And the error in the perception of self gives rise to the fundamental problem of sense of smallness, sense of inadequacy, sense of unhappiness centered on I. And all our efforts are to resolve this fundamental problem. I'm unhappy, so I want to be happy by doing something. I'm small, if I want to do something, to become what I am. I'm insignificant, so I'm doing something to become significant. I'm inadequate, so I'm doing something to be adequate. So all our efforts are expressions of our likes and dislikes, our desires to change non-acceptable self. And unfortunately, whatever we do cannot, no karma phalam can really help us resolve the fundamental problem. Karma and karma phalam cannot help us resolve our fundamental problem. Because the cause of the fundamental problem is ajnanam, ignorance. Ignorance being the fundamental problem, how can karma phalam help resolve the problem? So result of an action, it is a prarthana phalam or japa phalam or meditation phalam or pilgrimage phalam. Any amount of punya karma, charitable activity, any amount of punyam we do, how much our punyam we earn, we can earn, come back to exhaust the punyam, no enjoyment of pleasures. But that will not help us resolve our fundamental problem, because fundamental problem is not caused by karma or karma phalam. It is caused by ignorance. If ignorance is causes the problem and the solution cannot be karma action, but solution is the knowledge. Therefore, here the error in my perception of the world has to be corrected, for which error in the perception of myself has to be corrected. In order to resolve the fundamental problem centered on I, for which I the knowledge of what I am is the only solution. Therefore, this I is definite, I being distinct from all these body, mind and complex needs to be understood. Thereby it has to be resolved in its sarupa. That's why the prakriyas are used, and especially panchakosha prakriya helps us to understand, to distinguish, to arrive at what it is. So when we resolve this individual annamaya, mistake the annamaya as the annamaya atma, then we resolve it as, negate it as annamaya kosha. We negate it, this annamaya, the vishti annamaya is resolved in samashti annamaya, samashti annam, and the samashti annam resolved in samashti prana. Then vyashti prana is resolved in samashti prana. The samashti annam is resolved in vyashti prana. How do we resolve? It is purely understanding that the gross universe has no independent existence. Without the subtle manifestation, so at every level, when we understand, we resolve the samashti, vyashti, annamaya in pranamaya as mithya, the vyashti annam also resolved in samashti prana, samashti annam, the entire samashti annam is resolved in samashti prana. Samashti prana is resolved in samashti manaha. Samashti manaha is resolved in samashti vijnanam, samashti buddhi, Hiranyagarbha. It is the same. And finally, everything has to be resolved in maya. Avidya. And avidya has to be resolved in Brahma. Maya has been resolved in Brahma. And what is that Brahma? Brahma is a word implying the reality. Yesterday we saw how we arrive at the reality in terms of its nature of knowing. Therefore, it is implied by the term jnanam, and it is this knowledge, it is this pure knowledge which has no thought form, it has no physical form, it has no other form, which is absolutely formless reality, which is of the nature of knowing, therefore implied by the term chaitanyam jnanam. It is this jnanam which has no time. We had to ask this question, kalaha. Does this consciousness have time limitation? Does it have a beginning and end? Where is the beginning for consciousness? Where is the beginning for consciousness? Everything begins in consciousness. Think here. I'm just quickly moved on to this. Where is the beginning of consciousness? Where is the beginning of knowledge? I mean, say pure knowledge. The awareness. Time has a beginning in consciousness. Space has a beginning in consciousness. And all the forms, names and functions which have beginning within the realm of time and space have beginning in consciousness. Time begins, space begins, all the forms, names and functions which exist within the realm of time and space begin in consciousness. Have their beginning in consciousness. And time enjoys existence in consciousness. Space enjoys existence in consciousness. And the entire world of objects, of forms, names and functions existing within the realm of time and space enjoys existence in consciousness. And the time resolves in consciousness. Space resolves in consciousness. The entire world of forms, names and functions existing within the realm of time and space resolves in consciousness. When is it resolves, doesn't get destroyed. It becomes unmanifest. When you say it becomes unmanifest in consciousness, means it becomes manifest in consciousness. So for the time and space and the world to become manifest, it becomes manifest in consciousness, therefore it resolves in consciousness. Unarvil, odungi unarvil ezhugirathu. It resolves in consciousness, it becomes manifest in consciousness. And this time and space and the entire world of forms, names and functions existing within the realm of time and space, we can say the object of consciousness. I'm not even saying here, object of consciousness. Which can be reduced to one word, matter. Object of consciousness is matter. Why do you say matter? Because object of consciousness. And because the object of consciousness, it is of the nature of inertness. Being inert means being incapable of revealing its existence by itself. Being inert means being incapable of revealing its existence by itself. And being incapable of revealing its existence by itself means being dependent on something else to reveal its existence, to come to light, thereby to enjoy existence, to have the status of being the existent. So when I say Jagat, my other than consciousness, which we arrive at in terms of its nature, the reality which we arrive at in terms of its nature of knowing, as the Swarup of the knower, obtaining him of knower, we see this entire objective universe includes time, space, and everything which exists in the realm of time and space is Jagat, which comes, exists, goes, again comes, exists, goes, becomes manifest, enjoys a status of being existent, again loses its status of being existent as unmanifest. This becoming manifest and becoming unmanifest repeatedly happens in consciousness. There's no creation, there's no destruction of the Jagat. The very word Jagat means that it comes and goes. The very word Jagat means that which comes and goes. It doesn't go anywhere outside of consciousness. So it remains in consciousness unmanifest. It becomes manifest in consciousness. Whether it is manifest or unmanifest, whether it is available for enjoyment and experience as manifest universe, or whether it is not available for enjoyment and experience as unmanifest universe, it doesn't have existence outside of consciousness. That is why the universe is ever inseparable from consciousness. The universe is ever inseparable from consciousness. And this universe is always dependent on this consciousness to come to light, to have the status of being existent. Therefore, the universe is mithya. It is this formless, abstract, subtlest consciousness arrived at as the swarupam of I, where we resolve the I sense. Just as we resolve the waveform in water, we resolve the I sense in this consciousness. What is I? The substantive I, the first person singular pronoun, I, the substantive, is just the forms, no, the form, name and function, for which substance is consciousness. Substance of the substantive I is consciousness. There's no other substance other than consciousness for this I. Body, mind, thoughts, emotions, sense powers, powers of organs of actions, physiological functions, and everything else pertaining to the body, mind, and complex, nothing is the substance of the substantive I. It is this pure consciousness which is the substance of the substantive I. Now we have to understand it is this one and the only consciousness, the substance of the substantive universe also. The only consciousness, secondless consciousness, non-dual consciousness, is the substance of the substantive universe, Jagat. How? I said time, space and rest of the changing forms, names and functions which constitute the world of objects exist within the realm of time and space. All of them together constitute the Jagat, and all of them, the entire Jagat, becomes manifest in consciousness, remains unmanifest in consciousness. I'm using the word very carefully. Remains unmanifest in consciousness, becomes manifest in consciousness. And manifestation of the Jagat begins with the manifestation of the knowledge of the existence of the self in terms of I am, obtaining him of a thought in every human mind. And the whole world becomes unmanifest for any every individual when the I sense is resolved. We have to understand the Samashti Pralaya also in this manner only. So if this Jagat, including time and space, becomes manifest and remains unmanifest repeatedly in consciousness, means it is this consciousness which cannot be located. Where is the consciousness? What is the locus of consciousness? What is the locus? Consciousness is the locus for everything. So that which accommodates is the biggest. Consciousness is not located. Everything is located in consciousness. Even though we arrive at consciousness in the mind as the source of I, as the truth of the mind, but having arrived at consciousness, now we have to understand how consciousness is the locus in which time is located, space is located, and the entire world is located. And consciousness has no locus. Therefore, everything being located in consciousness, when nothing is available for experience also, everything remains unmanifest in consciousness. When everything is available for experience also, it is everything shines in consciousness. Therefore, consciousness accommodates time. Consciousness accommodates space. Consciousness accommodates all the forms, names and functions which constitute the world of objects existing within the realm of time and space. Therefore, consciousness pervades time, pervades space, pervades everything here. There's nothing which is not in and through pervaded by consciousness. Sarva Vyapi, all pervasive, why it pervades? Because again, all pervasiveness is its Swarupam nature. Being all pervasive, being all accommodative, being the locus of everything, being the source of everything is the nature of consciousness. Therefore, it is implied by the term Atma. And because it is not subject to any limitation, it is implied by the term Brahma. Everything which enjoys its existence in consciousness, how can it limit the consciousness? Time enjoys its existence in consciousness, time cannot limit. Space enjoys its existence in consciousness. Space cannot limit. All the forms, names and functions, all the objects of perception and knowledge enjoy their existence in consciousness. Therefore, no object can limit. Therefore, consciousness is absolutely of the nature of limitlessness. Therefore, implied by the term Brahma, there's nothing which is bigger, greater, wider than consciousness, because consciousness is the absolute locus which accommodates everything. Therefore, consciousness is the biggest. That's why it's anoraniyan, mahato mahiyan, bigger than the biggest, greater than the greatest, small, tinier than the tiniest, subtler than the subtlest, smaller than the smallest. So small, big, the small, smaller, smallest, subtle, subtler, subtlest, big, bigger, biggest, the all these comparisons, the degrees of comparison are all adjectives for adjectives to describe only the objects of the objective universe, forms, names and functions of the objective universe. There's no noun, no word, no adjective, because noun is consciousness, adjective is consciousness, description is consciousness, verb is consciousness, whereas consciousness has no noun, no name, no word, no adjective, no verb, no action. All the communications, all the languages, all the words, which are all expressions of thoughts, everything is consciousness. That's why we call it universal reality. This is Swamiji used to say, how any culture of any land is one order of Ishvara. Because if you say there's no Ishvara other than the consciousness, this reality, being ended with the power of becoming manifest, is given the status of being the Lord Ishvara. Therefore, the whole universe which shines is knowledge, which is Ishvara. The universe is unmanifest, that is, unmanifest. The power is unmanifest, is Maya, which is Ishvara. The universe manifest is knowledge, power manifest is knowledge, which is Jagat. Therefore, here it is this consciousness where the I has to be resolved, where the world also is resolvable. From the standpoint of this consciousness, there is no Jiva Jagad Bheda. There is no Ishvara Jagad Bheda. So Jivaha is Brahma. Jagat is Brahma. Ishvara is also Brahma. All that is, there is only Brahma. The Jagat, which is the Mithya, form, name and function, Jagat can be reduced to Mithya, Namarupa, Karmatmakam, is a thing but Brahma. Resolve the whole Mithya Jagat in Brahma, and you can say what is only Brahma, the knowledge. Where are you? You've already resolved yourself. You resolve your identity with Brahma. Resolve the Jagat also in Brahma. See, you are here, Jagat is, but in your understanding, there's only Brahma. This is a fact which has to be understood, repeatedly dwelt upon, assimilated. When it is assimilated, definitely you will be living in the world as an individual, but still you will see the whole world in you as the truth. Relatively, you are in the world. Absolutely, the world is in you. Relatively, you are in the world. Absolutely, the whole world is in you. Any questions?
Swami, when you said, Swamiji said 10 people in the world, there are 10. Did he categorize the 10?
You know, no, not exactly 10. What I'm saying, when I say Swamiji says, see, how many people do we associate with? See, your family members.
Yeah.
No? Your family members. And then, so family means first circle family, first husband, wife, children. Then your parents, his parents. Then grandparents. Then uncles and aunts. Then sisters-in-law, brothers-in-law, relatives. And how many of, actually, we in a nation, we associate too much, okay? We have always relatives. And then we do have the relationship with, we just, then how many people do you associate with every day? How many people do you interact with every day, closely? Once you go to work, how many people do you have to talk to, interact with every day? How many people? 50 people, 60 people, 100 people? No. In your office, how many are around? Whether you're a medical professional or a manager or a secretary or whatever is the profession, whatever professional you are, how many people do you have to deal with? Because they become, because our dealing is interaction, brings a lot of frictions and things. How many people do we associate with? Very few. At home, very few. Every day, even relatives, occasionally they come and go. Otherwise, our own family members. Nowadays, even children are away. How long are they with you? When they're growing up as children, you are there with you. Now, after some time, they had to live their lives. Of course, you are there morally, emotionally supportive. But definitely not physically. So the world is very small. Every one of us have our own small. All our pains, all our problems, all our sufferings are associated with just a few people whom we associate with. Isn't it? The world is so wide. Our world is so small. And there are 10 significant people in your life. Thomas, you should say this.
Thank you.
So what causes you pain? What worries you? What are all the 10 thinking about? These are the people. Nowadays, pets. In California, I learned it. People talk and discuss about, oh, what happened to that? Oh, he died. He was not well. And I was talking about, and I thought they talked about some relatives. Then they talked about the dogs. Because when they go for a walk, they stand and talk. They bring the dogs. One day one dog was missing. Where was he? And they talk about. What I'm saying is just, see, we emotionally get entangled with things we associate with. And especially blood related. Otherwise, even not blood related, some we make relationships with people. You know, we associate with. Chinmayananda used to say, you always rise in love, don't fall in love. And you fall in love with somebody and then there again problems come. Nothing wrong. I'm not saying not love anybody. What I'm saying, association, how many people in the world really cause pain for you? How many people in the world come and trouble you? Few people. So that to say that, how many you say 10 significant people? They send 10 significant people in your life. You're attached to close, attached to your brothers and sisters or your cousins, you know. And at work, the people, actually the whole day you're working with somebody in office, you have to meet every day your boss or subordinates. These are the few people. If you ask anybody talking about any complaint, is about what? About either the family members, one of the family members, or about the friends, or about the relatives, or about my people in working place. World is so wide and big. But our trauma is all what? Only a few people we associate with, few interact with. Today, most of the things are already repetition. Most of the things are repeated. Only very few things are just added. I put it differently, maybe. I don't think anything new I said today. But still, it has to be heard for further clarity. Sometimes you might have felt our repetitive also. But I don't mind. Because sometimes you have to see it right now. Swamiji always used to say, that's what is giving vision. Without contradiction, if we can see, accept what is being said, then you are seeing. There is teaching. So, yegan, anegan. In Shivapuranam it comes. Shivapuranam is amazing. That is small. Manika Vachagar is for me Advaiti. Okay. People accept or not. Anyway, we don't need to argue with other people. It's not for argument. It's for our own clarity. Yes. So whoever says doesn't matter. Om Harihi Om Tat Sat Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavasishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Tat Sat Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.